Recording in progress.
Hi, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators, home to NARC Troopers. If you would like to hear other podcasts, read articles, and find other resources, join me on my website, and it's narctroopers.com. Today, I'm very excited to have a guest with me today, Myla Morningstar Kinney Kinney. She is a writer on Quora and does just a beautiful job of having honest, authentic conversations about what it is to be in a relationship with a person with narcissistic personality disorder. I can't get my page here where I have the list. So, Myla, I'm going to let you tell us about your three Quora spaces where we can connect with you.
Sure. So I have three spaces on Quora that I'm actively involved in right now that I've created. The first one was The Narcissist Wife. That was the first one that I launched. And that one's a very personal site. A lot of, you know, personal experiences on that one. And then the next one that I created was a Hidden Covert Narcissistic Abuse and Recovery. And that one focuses just on the phenomenon of covert narcissistic abuse, so that, you know, when you really, you can go long, many years without knowing that they really have this. And then the other one that I recently just started is called the Art of Narcissism, which it's not how to be a better narcissist or anything. It is about processing your feelings through poetry or drawing or digital art and things like that. So I'm trying to get that one going. And so if anyone wants to stop in and check that out, they're more than welcome to.
I follow you on Quora, and I have my favorite writers there, Sophia Bell, Robert Torbay. There's some excellent writers who really speak quite candidly about the subject, and I always learn so much. I know that there's a lot of fans who say Quora saved their life, and that when they stumbled upon that and started reading about what is narcissism, it was just transformational, and it was like a lifeline being thrown to them. You know, there's so much misunderstanding about what is a narcissist, and you know, isn't everybody a narcissist? And with the you know, disengagement from the narcissist, there's so much misunderstanding, like, oh, it's just a breakup, you know, it's just a divorce. We all have those. Just get over it. And that's not at all. It's so terrible to be victimized twice, once by the narcissist and again by the community you're in, friends and family, because they just don't know. And so I know you and I are both committed to educating people about what this is and all of that. So if it's okay, let's just go ahead and jump in and kind of talk about a little bit about those cycles of narcissistic abuse. And let me also add one other thing. You know, abuse does not necessarily entail physical abuse. You know, emotional ambient abuse can be equally as devastating. The covert narcissist is really good at that ambient abuse. And most of the time you don't even realize it is abuse until you're out of it and reflecting back on it later. And then you realize, oh my gosh, that is what that was. And wow, how did I not know that? But in these abuse cycles, you know, there's the three stages, the love bombing, the devaluation, and the discard. So let's just talk about that a little bit, how that has, what your observations are on those stages, and kind of how that, how people can recognize that, what stage they're in and what to do about it and that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Just to say something on what you just said, you know, I've had people tell me, well, why don't you just talk to him? And it just makes me laugh, because any of us who've been through it, of course, understand that is what we've tried to do the whole time. And of course it doesn't work. It's not successful. So, I mean, I guess I should start a little bit with, so I've been married to, I was married to a covert narcissist for 33 years. I met him when I was 17. And just like a little bit of the background on that. So the love bombing for me, he really did become who he thought I wanted him to be. And I can clearly see that now. As a person, he was deferential. He almost acted subservient at times. So I look back on that, and you know, I was so young and I really didn't have a lot to compare it to. And to me, that was just the water that I swam in kind of thing, you know. It didn't seem, and I've been doing that. I mean, even now I will look back on things and I'm like, oh my God, that really was abusive. And, you know, it's just that when you're in it, it's the water that you're in, you don't always recognize it for what it is. That's just the way marriage works, or that's just the way things happen. The fact that we never really, I mean, we had these periods of time where we had conflict, but in our daily life, we never fought because he never told me anything that he wanted or to change, you know, nothing. And I now see that as a red flag as well, that you should have, you know, normal, healthy conflict. If not, then the person that you're with is suppressing their ego somehow to allow yours to move forward. Robert Torbay, you mentioned him. He actually says this really cool thing that I just read. You know, he says that idea that they would do favors for us all the time, that anyone with a healthy ego, a healthy sense of self, would understand that those kinds of things are not really deserved. And then they would kind of want equal, you know, they would want reciprocation. They would want to reciprocate. You know, I my sense of self was weak because I was so young when I met him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he was always running around doing things, you know, that for me that I didn't ask for. And I actually came up with five F's, I call them, of narcissism that I like to explain, like some of the stages that I passed through. And the first one was fast. So number one is fast. There is a lightning fast connection with these covert, yes, especially. They're very cerebral. They try to connect, you know, mentally. And that is what he did with me. It was, we would have these, you know, hours long talks. But, you know, now I don't even know if much of the stuff that we talked about was even something that he was interested in. I think that
probably not. You know, I think they have an incredible gift that just comes with this illness. It is an illness. Mm-hmm. And that enables them to like tap into people and just, mm-hmm, mirror them and reflect them.
Yes.
So you're really kind of like talking to yourself.
You really because, are. And because they're not there. In a double way, right?
Exactly. You are your own ultimate love, mm-hmm, relationship. I mean, they become, yep, everything you ever dreamed of and ever wanted, and, yep, all your secret desires, and they, yep, complete you. And it's just, yes, this over the top, magical, fantastical, woo, you know, yep.
And
like
that. That is my second one, is fantasy. Okay. That is what they do.
All right.
First one is fast. There's a lightning fast connection, and they'll move to like the love stage very quickly. I mean, basically, you know, my ex, when I got with him, he latched onto me and just never left. I mean, it kind of, I guess looking back, it might look kind of creepy, but I don't know. It just was normal to me. But, mm-hmm, you know, he did get me from a rebound relationship. And they do that often. They will, yes, they will approach when you're weak, when you're on the rebound from another relationship. That's when they kind of like to. I like to say that narcissists inhabit endings. And I think that is true. They inhabit them in more ways than one, not just the ending that they bring to you, but then they inhabit other people's endings, the endings of their relationship or some traumatic thing in their life. And they're there to pick up the pieces, right? And they're the shoulder to cry on. They're the ones that are going to be different. And that is almost never the case, that they're going to be different. So the next one would be fantasy. And that was really kind of, you know, and it's so hard to explain because, you know, I didn't have any fantasy life. I didn't. It's hard to explain to people why that fantasy means anything to me. I wasn't rich. We weren't rich. We didn't have much. It is the way that they make you feel, right? Mm-hmm. They make you feel like the two of you are special, like you're in your own world, like everyone else is an outsider, like all the two of you need is that or the two of you, and then, you know, you're better than everyone else. You're, you know, smarter, you're more beautiful, you're whatever. And really that you don't need outsiders at all. So that fantasy is a fantasy of perfect love is what it is. So not so much a fantasy life, but the ideal of perfect love. And that is what they try to give you. And for a long time, he did give me that. I mean, I could never in 1,000 years have predicted what happened would have happened the way it did. I would have bet my life that I knew him. And I didn't. And that was that's the really heinous part of it, that you think you know someone after all of those years.
It feels very organic, doesn't it?
It does.
It feels like you've known them for lifetimes. Like they're just such a perfect fit.
Yes.
And that there's such intimacy. And the irony is that it's the opposite of intimacy.
It is. It was all created.
It's just, and it is a complete... What is a nice way to say it? You know, cluster, you know what, of the mind.
Yes, cluster F, yes.
And there's, it is unbelievable to look back at that and to realize what it was. It's just almost like it blows your mind.
It does, and it makes me ill. You know, I still get nauseous sometimes thinking about it because it's like, when it's your reality, right? Your whole reality is undermined by these people.
And let me just add this. You know, this is not just your experience or my experience. Like, what a coincidence that you and I see this the same way. There's like a textbook manual that almost every person with narcissistic personality disorder goes by that rule book.
Yes.
They have the same behaviors, the same progression, same everything. Just like any mental illness is going to have, you know, like a schizophrenic would have maybe auditory or visual hallucinations. Yes. Same concept. This illness, this narcissistic disorder manifests in that way. So that does make sense if you think about it. It's a manifestation of the illness of the brain dysregulation, chemical, physical, anatomically, you know, the whole thing all together. So yeah, it's not just us, it's everybody.
We don't know exactly how, you know, why it occurs. They have some guesses, they don't know for sure.
Right.
But we do know that, you know, it usually starts to happen probably between the ages of 3 and 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And then the NPD is in place by early adolescence.
Yeah.
And it's really a shame avoidance disorder. They have had something, you know, whatever it is, they refuse to participate in shame at all. They won't be shamed. It's like battery acid to them. It's like if you threw it on them and they have run from it. And so whatever they do, so the reason that these things are so consistent is that there's only a certain array of human behaviors you can choose from, right? Given any path that you're on. And if you're trying to avoid shame at every turn, you can pretty much predict what they're going to do. You're going to take the direction, they're going to take the direction that's going to be the least amount of shame or the most amount. And so you can also see that in a positive vein, which is like, say, the most amount of attention. Or the other way that they can avoid shame is by placing it on you. Mm-hmm. So if they're placing it on you, then that's a way to get the shame off of them. And so they'll do that. So one of those maneuvers is what they're going to take in any given situation. And so it's no wonder really that they are all very consistent in that playbook.
Exactly. So back to the 5 F's, we've got fast, we've got fantasy, and oh, what a glorious fantasy.
Yes, it is. It's a fantasy of perfect love, right?
Perfect.
It's perfect. It's going to be perfect and eternal. And
it's everything we ever wanted.
Mm-hmm. And you do feel that, and it's so hard to transmit that thing, right? But I mean, I try to do it. I've tried to write about it, but it's hard. Mm-hmm. Just imagine that, you know, that you're just I used to describe it as myself. I was in a bubble, like a bubble that he, even before I knew MPD was or anything, I would say that. Like I was in a bubble that like he sort of created around me.
Yeah.
And the world just didn't hit me as hard. You know?
Magical insulated bubble. Mm-hmm. Who cares if there's a pandemic or war or famine or inflation? I'm in this bubble and I could die right now and be blissfully,
least I
gloriously.
Have this,
Woo!
Right,
it's just like everything is always just perfectly.
Yeah, it's, I wrote a one Quora thing that I wrote said, you know, it's the equivalent of the temperature always being perfect, you know, 78 degrees outside.
Yes.
And you're on an island somewhere. It's like Fantasy Island. It's just
it
your
is
island.
Fantasy Island. That is really.
Oh, it's your
exactly
island.
What
it's
it
the
is.
Idea that if you could find that soulmate and you could walk through life with them in some sort of, you know, Disney, you know, spotlight coming down, that is how it feels.
It does.
And it wouldn't look that way necessarily to the outside, from the outside end of people, but nothing touched me. I mean, I was just kind of disconnected from all of that. And, you know, I realize now that he isolated me too, but that was kind of secondary to, you know, that was just what I'd always felt. And
I've heard
horrible.
People say that shared fantasy stage is actually, I believe Sam Vaknin was the first person who said this, that the shared fantasy is actually a mutual psychosis.
It is. It
it's
is.
A mutual
and that is
psychosis.
One of the things I'm going to talk about that we, you know, because I have also have eight ways to recover from narcissism. They're all R's. So we'll do F's and R's
Yay.
Today.
Okay. So what's number
love,
three?
I love onomatopoeia. So.
What's F
all right, so
number
the third
three?
One is favors. So one of the big things to watch for whenever you're, you know, if you're looking out for narcissism or possible narcissistic abuse, possibility of it is, especially a covert narcissist, they're the opposite of grandiose. I mean, they still want the same thing. They want supply, but they go about getting it in a different way. And the way that they do it, they're smart. I mean, they're super smart. They figured out that if you're blunt about it, if you hit people over the head with it, like a grandiose might, people might shy away from that, you know? So they are sneaky about it. And what they end up doing is they put out this idea out there that, you know, they're very humble. They can be great neighbors. I mean, my ex-husband was like, he was the first one out there, you know, shoveling snow on a Saturday for a neighbor. He was very much into appearances, how everything was perceived, right? And everybody, if you were to meet him right now, and I mean, I'm serious, you would probably think I was making the whole thing up because
right.
he would
They're
come across
charismatic.
As totally authentic, the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't spot a single thing in him that would be unusual about like that.
And probably very soft-spoken and sweet and
yes.
polite and
yes.
courteous.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mine was always just so, I mean, he never raised his voice. And I
yes.
have always been amazed at how you can actually just annihilate someone, just totally destroy them without ever laying a hand on them or ever raising your voice.
Yeah.
He taught me that is
well,
possible.
With my ex, you know, he did eventually raise his voice, but for 25 years, he didn't really.
Mm-hmm.
And never talked to me like he did in the last four years when the devaluation really
mm-hmm.
started. But the way that our relationship started out was really about, you know, him doing a lot of things, you know, he would just do them unasked. I didn't ask him to do them, but he would do them all the time. It was just a kind of thing, kind of a fetch and carry kind of thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, let me get you this, let me get you that, let me serve you, let me be your humble servant. And then it kind of, you know, moved out to other things, but he was always the first one, you know, to volunteer, to go to the store, to do those little things, you know, that
mm-hmm.
you don't always want to do.
And other people see them as that,
mm-hmm.
as just this,
yeah.
wow, she's so lucky. And wow,
yes.
what a catch. And he's just
oh,
so
Oh God,
awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's called virtue signaling too. And the narcissist
yes.
is signaling to other people that, you know, look how great I am, look how lucky she is. Or sometimes signaling to new partners that they might be.
Well, he's also, or she, you know, he
yes.
or she is also getting fuel or supply from
mm-hmm.
that admiration of look at how
yeah.
awesome, you know, that.
Well,
that
and
this
anything
is.
That they later spend, because we'll talk about that a little bit more, any kind of devaluation that they do to what we call flying monkeys, which are just people that don't know who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone really who buys their act because they don't know who they are. So it's, you know, and these are people too that don't, you know, don't think too deeply about it. They're not going to. They
well,
just kind of
they
take
have them fooled, but then again, they have us fooled too. So,
yeah, you know. Exactly. So, I mean, I don't fault people for, you know,
right.
There are probably many people out there that I don't know right now that are covert narcissists that, if I heard it from their spouse or their partner, I might believe it now, but I wouldn't have believed it then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's important to believe victims. It really is.
So but, we have fast and fantasy, and number three,
and favors.
Favors. Mm-hmm. The favors meaning this perfect.
The fourth one, it's this is moving more into devaluation stage. It's I call it finicky.
Finicky is number four.
He is number four. So
love it.
As they move into devaluation mode, what they start to do is, first of all, it's, you know, everything's got to comport with, you know, what's best. I mean, you've got to, the environment has to suit them. But really, with what it started out with me was, I mean, it was like a switch was flipped, really. So one day he was the fantasy love person guy. And then the next day, basically, he left for 2 weeks. And then basically he came back and he was this other person, this imposter, this alien, whatever. And, you know, it was everything I said, my tone was wrong. The word was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He took offense to everything.
And just pick.
And it was just like everything. He was so finicky about, like, I couldn't even open my mouth. And finally, mm-hmm. By the end, it became, you know, the act of speaking itself was the problem. And we would go into this whole word salad thing and at first, I mean, I would get so confused. The confusion was profound. I like to say there's five signs of covert narcissism: confusion. Like, it is. It's like the confusion, the cognitive dissonance is so massive because you know that somewhere in there you were making a point. There was a point. And yet they're spinning around on this little tiny micro point thing, and they have you retreating. They have you, you know, oh my God, yeah, you right. I did do something in 1982. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Exactly.
And they have you in that position, and then you know that the bigger point has gone. You know that you're losing this battle. You just don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that the bigger picture, like, this should be so easy, right? It should be. To just sit down with another human being and talk about it, right?
But that's impossible. That's impossible to do that. But mm-hmm. for me, for example, we were planning a move. You know, bad things had happened. Of course they had. And I had minimized them and stood by him, defending him, excusing him, rationalizing it all. You know, just all the things I should not have done. Any neurotypical person would have just exited the building and said, wow, you know, that is messed up.
Can't, but you're trauma-funded.
I mean, and they would be gone, but no, I stayed. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. You know, the effort to talk to him was in effort to, you know, find jobs, and we were going to buy another house in the new location. And I was excited about it, like, new start. Oh, we're going to be in a new place and we're not going to be reminded of all the terribly horrible messed up stuff you've done here. Right. And we're going to go there and then it'll be cleaner and better. So let's plan this. And, you know, he would cooperate to a large degree and be on board. Like, yeah, we would go visit and we got a realtor and it looked like everything was as it should be, but there was always that undercurrent of criticism and picking. And at one point he said, why do you always burst my bubble? He said, it's like you've just got this pin and you're always just poking at my bubble.
That's what he's doing.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that's projection and transference, right? And I thought, I am trying to help us build this new, better, improved 2.0 version of our lives. Be excited with me and work with me. Don't attack me and tell me that I'm being overly critical. If I'm saying something that you're interpreting as poking your bubble, I'm sorry. That is not my intention. It is to
have attention gets lost,
some realistic plan and a realistic expectation of what's going to happen here. Let's just navigate this together. He couldn't have that conversation because in his mind, all he could see was contempt for me, because I wasn't giving him what he needed with the fuel and supply. And there had been so much ugliness and water under the bridge, I wasn't shiny and sparkly anymore. And there were all these other people, girls that, I mean, he was a cutie patootie. He was younger than me. And he would go out and people would think, whoa, what a catch. And, oh, well, you're so awesome and you're so handsome and you're so smart. And we were way past that. We were together. We were married for 15 years. And we, you get past that of having to inflate their ego all the time and pet them and, oh, you're so
And
amazing.
you have, I mean, that just, you have to spend all your time doing that, right?
You have other things that should be common vision kind of things that you're doing together
Well, we
as
raised three children
partners,
together,
but that
and
doesn't happen. So finicky is perfect. I'm loving this.
okay. And then
Okay.
number five
Number
is
five.
finished. No, you burnt. Goodbye. My ex, when he started down that road, and this could be called the long goodbye too, because
Yes.
it doesn't. Sometimes they will just suddenly discard you, but and mine would hoover me back over and over. I just didn't know it was called hoovering then.
Right.
I had no idea. He would micro hoover me, if that's even a word.
It
So
is. I've read about
like
this.
he would do it several times a day. It was crazy. In my mind, in my emotional landscape, we had broken up. I mean, like that day, three or four times, and then he would switch the whole emotional landscape on me and be like, and toward the end, it really got the cycles got super fast. One of those indications I think that they're finally going to discard or that you're going to have to is that it just gets so much worse toward the end, or at least it did for me. And the cycles got really close together. Like he would basically show contempt for me, devalue me, push me away, say he was leaving, and then in the same 30-minute span, be over all over me, trying to like kiss my neck and just.
Exactly. That just turn on a dime. And you never know what is happening. This isn't even,
No, you
this doesn't
don't.
make
You're just
sense.
like,
What is going
you are. I
on?
mean, I spent so much time in confusion because of that, just cognitive dissonance. I would have a like a brain fog all the time. And then the whole overall thing, I would try to ask, like, why are you doing this? It just seemed like it should be such a simple thing to sit down and figure it out, right? No, it's not. They will talk in circles. It's all circular logic. It's all around that. But the finish thing, I mean, it really is. They are moving toward a goal, whether they know it or not. I don't know how much of it is always conscious or not. But anyone who was normal would see what their actions were doing.
And didn't you intuitively have some gut feeling
Oh yeah.
that he hated you towards the
Yes,
end,
well,
and that he
yes.
was just like disgusted by you, and you just
Yes.
knew that if he could push you in front of a bus, he'd probably do it, but you kind of like dismissed it because of the cognitive dissonance and just told yourself, that can't be right. I'm just imagining this. He's my
Well, and
husband.
mine
He
was even
loves
worse.
me.
I was really in denial after so many years, and I had been with him so long and was so young. And I mean, there, because I wouldn't, it wasn't really that, it wasn't bad abuse, but there was physical abuse. And this last four, the last 4 years that we were together, and he would have these rages. I mean, I don't know. I think that he did come from a really strong family. They were LDS, which is Mormons out here in Idaho and Utah. And I really do think that there was a part of him, that false self that he built up, really was, did think that he was all these things, that
I
he
think
was.
they do definitely. They're delusional. It is a delusional dissociative
It
disorder.
is,
They do
yes.
not live in the same reality that you and I
They
live
don't.
in.
He really thought he
So,
was all those things, though. And one of the things that he tried to do, in a way, and I don't know that anyone's ever really said this, so I'll say it, is I do think, in a way, he tried to live up to that false self, in a way.
I
He
agree
stayed
with you.
bothered that he should
Absolutely.
have.
Yes, I
And
agree with
make him
that. And
so
that's.
angry, right, that he would rage after, like, because he would stick around and stay. So, I think those levels of empathy go up and down depending on the person.
Well,
Just.
let's talk about empathy real quick, and I'm gonna transition over to I've gotta do a technical thing in a
No
second.
problem.
So give me 2 secs. One, two.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
I want to, looking back at these five F's, I think we have to say that the narcissist, while they're going through this, these five steps, there never does it cross their mind that there is anything wrong with them, or that in their reality that they live in, they are the victim, if anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They are the one that has been betrayed. They are the one that has been disappointed by your terribleness, and they have they have just a huge, huge amount of resentment towards you. Contempt and resentment.
Yeah,
like, how could you have been so horrible to them? Yeah. And I want to talk about another feature that goes with that, is their amnesiac kind of
they will wipe you off the face of the earth in their mind.
They do not have continuous memories either. Not only and this is the thing that just it's unbelievable to me that a person could do this, even if they have some kind of disorder or mental illness.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I still can't understand. I mean, I couldn't do that. You couldn't do that. Any normal person, they live with their memories, and they have continuous memory. That's what that's the psychological term for it. Continuous memory. So they can reflect on their past, learn from it, make adjustments, whatever. And they remember people. And when you remember, you know, when you connected with a person and you've been intimate with them, you remembered them with some degree of mercy, fondness, kindness, respect.
They don't remember those emotions.
They don't remember they ever felt anything positive.
No, because they didn't, though. That's why they don't remember that part.
Correct. I mean, never really connected in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so not only did they just hit the button and erase you as if you never existed or anything
they
like that.
They will do that.
The gaps that they have in their memory are filled with confabulations, fantasy, fabrications, and that they believe it. Some of these people that vilify the narcissist, and now, granted, I know what destruction that they do. I'm not a young person. I made it for a very long time, had some very terrible breakups and all of that, but nothing compared to this. You know,
it's really bad. And my ex, my ex had no sense of linear time either. Like, so if we were talking about something, he was literally hopping around in time, like, something happened before another thing, and that was the cause. The thing that happened later was the cause, and the thing that happened earlier was the effect. And I'm like, see, he just took whatever he needed for the fantasy to keep.
Exactly.
You know,
they fill in the blank, and they call it revisionist history, where they just make up a history. So who knows the narrative that he's spinning with his new friends, who, of course, my replacements, I'm sure there have been many in 3 years. my replacements and his friends, his groupies, his harem, his flying squirrels, his flying monkeys, his flying fantasies, all of that stuff, they believe this narrative. And probably I read somewhere maybe 10 or 20% of it is truth. That they only remember, I don't know what study was done. I wish I could tell you where it was done and who did it. But I know that I read they did a study with over 3,000 people that have been diagnosed with pathological malignant narcissism. And that's hard to find because most narcissists don't go to therapy.
They don't
get
go
diagnosed.
They don't go.
Or they go and they bamboozle their therapist. And the therapist
doesn't even know
what they are because they have such a bulletproof false persona. They can convince anybody, you know.
Anybody,
even your most...
You know, they convinced us, like you said. I, until I mean, until about two years ago. So the way that I actually found out about, I have a college degree. I took a psychology class. I barely remember the word narcissism.
Yeah, same here.
But yeah, and I, so anyway, I had a friend. She actually is staying with me this week. It's kind of odd, but she's much younger than me, but very courageous friend, because many people would not have done what she did. She actually had gotten really close to me, and she was here. She had lived with in a camper that I had, a trailer that I had for a while, and she kind of saw, she got to see a little bit of what was mm-hmm. actually happening. Mm-hmm. And in the wake of that, she and her boyfriend at the time, they actually invited me to a Denny's. They took me in their car, and we didn't get out of the parking lot. They sat and talked to me, and they told, she told me, and Tony told me, so their names were Casey and Tony, and he had been through a lot of therapy, and so he had some understanding of some things, and she had also, you know, had some things. Anyway, that was the first time that the idea, I think that the word narcissist was brought up to me. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you know, it could be a narcissist, could be a sociopath, could be, a, you know, and I mean, I listened, I heard them, but I thought, well, that's not possible. I mean, nobody can hide for that long. Nobody right. could fool me. That's right. just not possible, right? That wouldn't be a thing. And so I just tried not to judge, and I took what they said, and I just went on with it. But what that did do is it started me poking around, looking for answers. And I stumble on Cora, and all of a sudden I see this whole hidden world. And it was over a period of time that I really was, you know, before I actually said, okay, these are the things that he's doing. Now, what does that fit? Because mm-hmm. that's, I mean, I just went purely by that. What is he doing to me that makes no sense?
And once you get started with the research on this, it's amazing how much stuff there is out there about it, not just on Quora, but you've got like Melanie Tanya Evans and Kim Saeed. Yes. And my mm-hmm. guru number one person who's taught me the most is Sam Vaknin, but also Richard Grannon and Robert Torbay. And the list is, there's so much, there's so much crap out there.
You know, I don't know how people would have ever, people from other generations who did not have the internet, I don't know, I guess they just lived in hell until they didn't.
Maybe that's why there wasn't such a focus mm-hmm. on it like these days. Yeah. I don't like it the way that there's so much trendiness, pop culture.
Yeah, that's not,
everybody's a narcissist. Well, no, they're not. But it is increasing. I guarantee you, look at our leaders. Look at the people in charge of things that are making decisions in the world. I won't name names because I don't want to alienate political people.
Right, we're not political here.
We're all in this mess together.
We're just victims.
You know, and one party is not doing a better job than the other. They are all corrupt and failing us at this time.
Right.
So, but just look around the world at the people that are in charge. You don't think that there's something wrong with them? You know, I'm pretty sure that it's just, there are more of them and there's more awareness of it. So I hope that narcissism evolves kind of like ADHD evolved. You know, 20 years ago, I'm a teacher. And I had students that, you know, before they had that label and diagnosed them with ADHD, mm-hmm. before that was in the DSM, the mm-hmm. manual for different things, but it's like nobody talked about it. Nobody, right. it wasn't common mm-hmm. verbiage for people to say that, you know, a parent or a teacher. And we would just say, you know, think to these kids, you know, why don't you just sit down and stop wiggling around? Just sit.
Right.
You know, not knowing that there was anything wrong with them, except, gosh, you know, maybe they eat too much sugar. But now we know more. We have a deeper understanding of what it is. We know that they're probably overly medicated these days. But we also understand the things that, how to treat it and what to do with that situation, and that it is a condition and it's
and
legit.
Right.
I'm hoping that narcissism gets to that place where people understand it and acknowledge it, and they don't just throw the term around carelessly like everybody's a narcissist, you're a narcissist, he's a narcissist.
No. And I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah. I don't do either. Think, that, though, it takes away. It takes away from
kind
us.
Of ground roots thing, though, that's happening on Quora and on the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of, you know, people out there who are using the word irresponsibly. Like, my boyfriend broke up with me. Is he a narcissist? Like, you know, come yeah. on. Like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about some serious gut-wrenching.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fully understand anything about it, what the true NPD thing is. So, but I think that Quora and other places like it, I think they serve a function in that there is very little in the DSM. I mean, as far as what's actually there, right, about narcissism.
And they're changing it all the time. Mm-hmm.
But there's not all of this vast amount of detail that we have. This is people who just go out and they have observed it. Yes. They've either come through relationships themselves, and so they're saying what they lived, their lived experience. And there's actually very few, really, you know, people in the professional field that were focusing on it, at least at one time.
It's hard to find anyone, a mental health professional, who really understands what it is.
Well, you know, I sought out counseling. My husband did go a couple of times. And, well, that was just so much fun. That was such a disaster because I didn't realize it at the time, but, you know, we went and saw this woman. It was still COVID and it was, we did it telehealth. And so we saw her together once and then he saw her by himself once. And then I saw her by myself once, you know. Mm-hmm. So we saw her together. She seemed perfectly nice and fine. He saw her. And by the time she got to me, she had completely turned against me. I still have the letter that mm-hmm. I wrote to her that she completely mistook for anything that rational that I ever said. I mean, it was crazy. And I knew then, this was before I knew what narcissism was even. But I just, what the heck is going on
What
here?
Just happened, right? I felt the same way.
You know, so later on, there was another counselor, and I hate to admit that I did this, but I did, he had a session like that, and it was a telehealth, and I slipped my phone in and taped it. And, you know, it wasn't even that he was telling her anything bad. It was just that there's no problem. And he's being the nice guy, right? Asking about her, being nice, you know. So he's not even saying anything bad about me. It was just, I don't have a
problem. It's all part of the manipulation, though. Mm-hmm. My ex came to me and used the things his therapist that he got her to believe as ammunition mm-hmm. against me to give himself mm-hmm. permission to do the things he did. In the end, in the very end, when he suddenly just out of the blue decided it's time to go, I'm going to leave now. Mm-hmm. And he acted like, well, what's the problem? You know, do what I'm going to do. Be single, start dating, have fun. And right. I was just like, we're getting ready to move. And, you know, a week ago, we were
they do not
up
live in
house,
the real world.
You know,
either.
Wait a second.
What's happening here?
And he said, yeah, my therapist said she thinks maybe I'm polyamorous and I should just go with that.
Oh, I was they should all join a club for sure.
My gosh, this is like, what on earth are you talking about?
I can tell you some stories, but I won't.
Because, right like, now, you know, but it was like last week. I mean, we had just gotten back from a trip to Europe and then not a word about anything being wrong or leaving or being unhappy or whatever. We were eating crepes and holding hands through the streets mm-hmm. of Paris. And then, boom, he's gone and I'm polyamorous. My therapist said so. It's like, wow, you know, and he's not. And that wasn't, I mean, it was just what he told her and made her believe. Yeah. So,
You know, that idea of that final thing to finish. So, you know, as you reminded me, we have fast, fantasy, favors, finicky, and then finished. And that is the thing. Like, there were so many dress rehearsals for me. He would leave every other day or claim or say mm-hmm. he was going to leave. Sometimes many times a day. It started to feel unreal and the threat became, you know, not real. And it just sort of, you know, after a while, you just don't believe it. And yet, so your supply is diminished too, because they're not getting the reaction from you that they once were. And so they have to keep upping the ante to get it. But it is true that, like, especially covert, though, once you see through your fantasy self, once you see it, and Dr. Melissa Cald is someone that I follow on Quora. She's awesome. She says this, and I believe it's true. Once you see through their fantasy self, they will not stay ever. Now, some coverts, because some coverts will stay, they say, you know, for a long time. And they do stay for a long time. They really do invest in a long-term source of supply. They don't like the effort that it takes to go out and find someone else. They want that person to be there to just, you know, be able to unload crap on you and, you know, partly to get affirmative affirmation. But when that's gone, then to just, you know, kind of shit on your day or whatever. And they really invest in that long-term thing.
Yes.
But once you see past the false self, it's just a matter of time. And they will discard. And unlike a normal narcissist, or there is such a thing, but a grandiose narcissist, unlike them, coverts will discard you for good. They don't necessarily hoover you back. If you've seen past that false self.
Correct. They're
and
done.
You've really seen it. Like, there's so much shame or potential for shame involved with that, with them, that they will often, it'll be final. It'll be for good.
Oh, yeah.
They'll never come.
That's absolutely correct.
I say finish, that's what I mean with covert family. When they go, they're probably gone.
Let me toss one other thing out there to think about. They're beginning to think that all personality disorders are more interrelated than they thought previously.
Yeah.
And they're not like such separate diagnoses. They're also saying that maybe the covert, vulnerable, shy narcissist is really the only one that's truly a narcissist, and that the overt grandiose narcissist is really a primary psychopath.
That could very well be, because I really think that narcissism is a thing that is hidden in a way. I mean, it's not something that you approach straight on. I mean, I have felt this from the beginning, just intuitively, that you know, that people who go out and show that they're kind of like brag, the thing that you normally think of when you think of grandiose narcissists, you think of the word narcissist. You think kind of a bragger. You know, I have a son who's like that, but he's 26, you know. He probably is going to come out of that stage eventually, you know. It is those things that you would see when you'd see a young person kind of, you know, hey, I'm great, or young man, I'm great, I'm wonderful, yeah, look at me. And I think those things, if they stay past adolescence or early adulthood, those may be psychopathic traits. Narcissists are, they hide, really. I mean, you'll never really know it. And
definitely, you know, the covert. And that's what they're saying. We're in the vanguard, in the front of people naming in this. Sam Vaknin, Richard Brannan, and us are the only people that I have heard say that the covert is really the only true narcissist, and that the overt grandiose is probably just a psychopath, because there is such an overlapping of lack of empathy, lack of remorse, no object constancy, the projection, the shame, the you know, all that.
But, you know, the thing about psychopaths, though, I've always heard that they don't eat and kill their own mates, unlike narcissists. But I don't know. Like, you said, the lines get blurred.
They do. They can definitely.
Maybe they just try to keep up that public idea of, you know,
you're thinking about like the psychopath that has 20 people buried under the house and the wife that had no clue. But there's different kinds of psychopaths.
Right. There
there's different kinds of narcissists. And there's definitely the ones who harm their partner just as much as, you know, they harm, because that's just what they do.
Yeah, some people say narcissists, but they don't typically abuse like hell they
don't. Yeah, the narcissist is wants to have, there are some differences we don't have time to get into, but I think that you can have like be both. I think hence the term narcopath. You've heard that narcopath is a narcissistic slash sociopath, or a narcissistic slash psychopath. And yes, you can be both. You can.
And I think that sociopath part is often from environment too. Like, you know, the first word that was mentioned about my ex was sociopath. Mm. And I discounted that because I don't see him. I did not see him acting in those ways, but it could be because he came from a good family. He had enough money. He didn't have, you know, those conditions that are set for really making someone sociopathic. But if he had, I think that he could very well have gone down that road.
Yes.
You know,
there's a lot of criminality, you know,
there are.
These days,
you
know, it's preferred. It's kind of like Asperger's is not a politically correct term anymore. You don't say that people have that. They have autism. They're somewhere on the autism spectrum. And with sociopaths, they don't really say sociopaths anymore. It's antisocial personality disorder. And that explains it so perfectly, right? Uh-huh. And you could have a narcissist with those antisocial personality traits. You can have a cerebral narcissist or a somatic that's covert. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have, you know, there's all kinds of things going
physical,
on.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
No, the cerebral, you know, I'll throw out one crazy theory that I have. I could be breaking new psych ground here. I don't know. But I actually think there's another type called a failed narcissist. And I've met a couple of those. And the way that I like to put it is they want supply. They are covert narcissists. They're terrible at it. They don't have the charm or they don't have the ability to really get someone in. So what they do is they fall back almost completely on their flying monkeys, right? So they'll come in and they'll get someone and they'll victimize them, and then they'll run back, they'll dump them, finished, right? They'll run back to their flying monkeys, and they get almost all their supply off being a victim to their flying monkeys. That's what
Absolutely.
They do.
Absolutely, that happens. And let me say this, you know, cluster B disorders, you've got your cluster A, B, and C. C being like dependent personality disorder and stuff like that. But cluster B is borderline, histrionic, narcissist, sociopath, and psychopath. Those five.
Right.
And Sam Vaknin calls the borderline a failed narcissist.
Could be. But what the borderline's trying to do is, so they are actually a narcissist, but for one person.
That's they seek external.
They're focused on that one person. So they really are narcissists, but only with that one person.
Correct. I mean, all have in common is they're seeking validation outside of themselves because
they don't know how to
self-validate. They don't know how to be whole or complete by themselves.
Right.
And so they have to go outside.
Well, and the borderline is after perfect love, right?
Yeah.
That's what the borderline. So, gee, how well does the narcissist and the borderline just click for a while,
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Narcissist, codependents, narcissist, empaths, narcissist, borderline. There's a lot of material out there about that combination. That's like the relationship from hell for sure. And
I agree. We can get a little too, you know, sometimes people out there, you know, they can get a little too, too into labeling everything. I mean, it was a
absolutely. I think all that we really need to know, instead of trying to figure out, am I borderline? Am I codependent?
Yeah.
Am I an inverted narcissist? Because that's a thing. I decided that's probably what I was. I self-diagnosed myself as an inverted narcissist at one point during recovery, because they're the ones who cannot ever be happy unless they're in a relationship with a narcissist.
That could be because, like, you know, they say that some people are narcissist magnets, and I would say that I might be that as well.
Yeah,
it's like once you've had that, once you've had fake sugar, you don't want real sugar anymore.
It's like everybody else is black and white, and they're so bland and boring, and so healthy, and so
there is a kind of danger with them, and it's like a world of possibility, right? When you meet this person, what they do is they give you this feeling that everything is endlessly possible. You could be rock stars tomorrow, or you could like be invited to orgies with really attractive people or something.
It's like heroin. It is exactly like a drug. We could do a whole talk on how it is.
It
These
is
relationships
like
are like being addicted to heroin. We have to detox We have to get that drug out, because as long as we're craving that drug, we're craving that intensity, that technicolor, that perfect fantasy. Nothing else is ever going to compare. And I'm sure that that's how drug addicts feel. Like, you want to give me, you want to give me an Advil and tell me to just, you know, I need the heroin, because that's the only thing that's going to make me feel alive. It's going to make me feel okay. And without that, I'm not. So,
it's really bad. And it's like, I wrote a little thing once about, you know, the idea of that fantasy, that eternal fantasy. And, you know, I had so much response from people, mostly women, but it was this idea that, you know, I really kind of described it as, hey, we kind of want to be back there in that perfect 78 degrees and you know, everything, blue skies forever. And everybody kind of responded to that with like, I mean, I hate him, but and the thing is, we're kind of pissed that we, you know, they kicked us out of their fantasy bubble. Yes, they're awful people, but we didn't know it. And ignorance is bliss, you know.
That's exactly
right. So I'd just like to go over in the last few couple minutes probably we have. I'm not sure where we're at on time, but I do have some 8 R's. So we did 5.
Can we just list them today? Because we've only got about 5 more minutes. And I would like to come back at some point with you and spend a whole nother episode on those 8, on those 8 things. But give us a little preview. Give us a preview. Okay.
Well, these are just my 8 R's on how to overcome narcissistic abuse. And so the first one is remember and relive, reflect, renounce, release, restore, and rebuild. And so those are just the steps that you go through to kind of get from, you know, where they left you at the bottom of wherever, to get up to the surface. And it's a really difficult process. I don't think anyone understands that, you know, really people say there's like all the 5 steps of narcissistic abuse. Well, the first step after narcissistic abuse is, I'm allergic to showers, a stage, you know, and I can't get out of bed stage.
Yeah.
And then there's
complete collapse.
I think I'm going crazy for reals this time stage. I mean, it's really hard. You feel like your whole reality's been upturned. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many of you have ever been on an acid trip. I took it a couple times in college. And let me tell you, it was nothing compared to the trip of the narcissism.
Yes, I might have done that in high school a couple of times, maybe.
Oh, my
God. I don't know. But
It's like an acid trip with no acid.
And how does anything compare to that?
I don't know.
How does anything compare to that? So
it's terrible.
I called myself a love junkie once, I think in one of my articles, because as far as naming like a label for myself, you know, I think it works, because the addiction thing, we should do a talk on that, Myla, on addiction, how we become physically, chemically, on a cellular level.
Yes. We
really
definitely
addicted to them. This
I
is
mean, when
not
I'm around him at all, not, I can almost feel myself jonesing. They say, as they call it, for a hit of what he has, like
the hit of dopamine,
give me validation. Tell me I'm okay.
Yes,
you know, like, make me okay.
Let's have the heroin in the eyeballs right now.
Yeah, right?
Give it to me. Give it to me.
I can't get anywhere near him, or I'm like, I'm just crazy.
The last
you know?
Time that I saw my ex-husband, I thought I was at a better place. I had gone through all that crazy first year of just wanting to die and falling apart and crumbling and all of that. And I felt like I was unsteady, but I was standing. So I thought, okay, I'm going to see him, give him some, like his guitar back and whatever. We went to an acai bowl place, and I was sitting at an outdoor table. And when I looked up, I didn't recognize him at first. I looked away, and then I was like, wait a second, is that him? And I looked again, and I tell you, it was like thunderbolts struck me and nearly knocked me out of my seat. I was overwhelmed with a gushing sensation of being flooded with like heroin. I was suddenly just euphoric. This is a person who ruined my life, ruined my relationship with my children, ruined my career. I was up for tenure at the college, didn't get that, you know, ruined so many things. And I was not just a victim. I volunteered, like, yes, ruin it all. I want you to ruin it all. Ruin it all some more. Ruin it more.
But just love me. Just love me. Ruin it all, but just love me.
Give me more. Give me more. Yeah.
The drug analogy is very good, actually, because it does just,
well. It was incredible. I was like a giddy middle school girl. When he walked up.
Like, oh, yeah. I mean, I've always said, just, you know, with my ex,
gosh.
Nobody could ever tell me anything about him. Nobody could ever tell me that anything was wrong. Like, I wouldn't hear it at all. And I always knew that. And yet, I thought that was okay. It was just fine, you know, because that was what love was. I thought, and here's the thing that I really understand. What I thought was love apparently isn't. I mean, love is a lot more layered, I think, than that, and probably harder than he made it for me, because he was playing a role. And at the end of the day, you know, do you want, you know, the drug that you want, or do you want reality? Well, truth is, we want the drug that we want, but when that goes away, we have to accept reality, and we have to live there somewhere.
And reality sucks right now, by the way. So wouldn't it be easier to have some medication for that? And the narcissist is that medication for
us. Yes, they really are. I mean, they make themselves into whatever personal drug you need.
Yes.
They do. They kind of like chemically alter. They just sort of alter all the molecules around you to be what you need. And when they want to have you, they'll keep that persona on perfectly. And then once they're really done or bored or whatever, that mask drops, and then they don't care. Yeah. And then the devaluation starts, and then the discard will come shortly thereafter.
It is some insane stuff, isn't it?
It is. I'll tell you.
Well, listen, we're going
to have to bond together.
Like. We're going to have to wrap it up, but will you tell us now? I'm going to put some things, hopefully in the description, some links where you can connect with Myla if you want to read some of her things. And you have this, what we talked about today in some kind of article blog you've written that
I will put it up on my site.
Get that to me.
So just go to Cora and search for Myla Morningstar.
So tell us real quickly before we go, how can they connect with you? Your like the Gmail, and also tell us about the website you're working on.
Right. So so on Cora, just search for Myla Morningstar. That's what I go off of on Cora. And, any one of my sites will come up hidden or any of them, or my profile will have everything. So, also you can reach me. So I do life coaching. I do, like to call myself a narcissism survival expert, because that's what I've been. I don't say I'm more or less. I survived it. And, I successfully divorced a narcissist, and I can hopefully, you know, anyone who's out there is overwhelmed and feels like they're losing the battle against cluster B or against narcissism. There is clarity. There is clarity out there from the people, especially who've survived it and gone through it and come out at the other end.
Yes.
It's either going to kill you or you're going to learn some things about it. So I do that. If you'd like to reach me, my email is roadsidenamaste, like the peace, like namaste, roadsidenamaste@gmail.com. And then my upcoming website that I'm currently working on is also going to be called roadsidenamaste.com. And if anyone's interested in booking a session on life coaching, I am just reach out to me by email for now, roadsidenamaste@gmail.com.
Roadside Namaste.
Namaste.
Okay.
But we'll have that up.
I want to thank you so much for your time. That is the greatest gift we can give to one another. And I know we have common goals, is to educate the world about the realities of what this is, both when we're in it and when we come out of it, in hopes that we don't get into it again. And so I think we're doing the work, boots on the ground. And I just really appreciate you and what you're doing. And I have such respect
for that. I appreciate what you're doing. I mean, I write, and I can only reach so many people, but this venue is amazing. And thank you for being such an awesome interviewer. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
This is my first podcast. So.
Well, thank you again. And to all my listeners, tune in again. Maybe we'll bring Myla back and talk a little bit more about some of these things that only survivors would know.
Secret survival
things. That's right. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.